Okay, so the main sources for this year, it's about is Perek Yud and Yud Aleph and Sefer Bereishis, right? The last two prakim in Parshas Noach and Rashi. Okay, and I'm going to try to go through the psukim and the Rashi's to show you like where it's coming from, because it's going to be a little bit a little novel, and I want you to. Now, I don't want you to think I'm like making stuff up too much, okay? A little stuff making up, but not too much. So I want you to see the sources, okay?
Sounds like a life-changing series. Just go under NR.
No, not NR. Okay, so first let's get an overview of Perek Yud through Yud Aleph in Noach, okay? So let's see. So the so Perek Yud starts off with recounting the todos of Noach, right? Shem Cham Yafes, and Ela todos Noach Shem Cham Yafes and Pasuk Hey Meila Nifredu Eya Goyim Baratzol Sam Ish Lashon Mishpachosam Goyim, right? From Shem Cham Yafes, the whole world was repopulated. Certainly, at least that area, right? Now you have the Torah goes through Bnei Cham. Right? It starts off with Cham, Cush, Mitzrayim, Put, Ukanan. Those were Cham's four sons. And it goes through, who they gave, who their children were. And Cush, which maybe was his oldest son, right? It goes on a little divergence. It says, Cush Yaladas Nimrod, Hu Hechel Yos Gibor Baretz. Right? So he started to become a Gibor Baretz, right? Not exactly clear what that means, right? Well, you kind of see from the psukim that follow, Hu haya Gibor Tzayid Lifnei Hashem, right? He was a strong trapper before God, right? It's interesting, always Lifnei Hashem is always an interesting term. What does that mean, Lifnei Hashem, right? Al Kein Ye Amar, and therefore, it is said, it's not clear what does Yehomar even mean, Ki Nimrod Gibor Tzai Lefnei Hashem. Okay? Vatihi Reishis Malmachto Bavel. And the beginning of his kingdom was from Bavel. V'erech V'akad V'chalnei B'eret Shinar. So his kingdom started from Bavel. It spread out in the land of Shinar. Okay? Minar Tzahi Yatza Ashur. V'yiven Es Ninves Rechovos Yerkalach. Okay, and then Torah goes on. So you have this, like, you have these psukim about Nimrod and the beginning of his kingdom, and that's pretty much all you hear from Nimrod in the Torah Shebichsav, right? It's kind of part of the challenge of learning these psukim is like trying to piece together the underlying story of what's going on in these events. The Torah is very cryptic in these events. But part of it is trying to figure out, well, you got these like random psukim, and like, what are they teaching you? Why is the Torah recounting these particular psukim about Nimrod, Gibor Tzai Lefnei Hashem? What is he even talking about? What's going on? Okay, then the Torah continues tracing the lineage of Cham and Canaan and all his offspring. Okay, then the Torah switches to Shem, right, in Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Ushem Yulad Gamhu, Hu Avi Koban Evra, Chiyavis Hagadol. I can go into that, Rashi. And then it goes through Shem's children. Elam, Ashur, Arpachshad, Lud, Varam. Right? Ashur, you see, Ashur is a son of Shem. Right? So we notice in the passage before, where after Nimrod, it says, Min Arza, Hu, He Yatza, Ashur. Ashur is, Rashi learns, is the same person. Ashur is the son of Shem. Okay, you see that? In Pasuk, right? Chaf Bez, you see, Ashur was son of Shem, and earlier when it was recounting, Rashi learns Asher was the person who left from Nimrod. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you have Arpachshad, you have Aver, and then you have Pasuk Chaf Hei, well, Aver, right? Aver is, let's see, Shem has Arpachshad. Arpachshad, his son was Shalach, and Shalach's son was Aver. Right, so Aver is a great grandson of Shem, right? And Aver yulad shnei banim, two children. Shem echad Peleg, Ki b'yamav nifaga aretz. So in his days, the dor haflaga, the whole dispersion occurred. And shem achiv yaktan, right? And his younger brother was yaktan. And yaktan has all these children. Okay? 13 kids. Okay, a lot of kids.
They have a nice chart here.
Oh, Art Scroll is a good chart.
It's very visual.
If you want to get it exact and memorize it, go to the Art Scroll.
Yeah.
Okay, and now the last pasuk is Eila Mishpachos B'nei Noach L'Toldosam B'Goyehim U'me'ila Nifridu Agoyim B'Aretz Achar Hamabel. Okay, Achar Hamabel. Then the next parak begins Vayihi Kol Aretzof Echas Dvar Machadam. Then you have the whole story of the Dor HaFlaga. Now the Dor HaFlaga, it's like very, like the Midrashim, it's to say it a few times, it's like the Dor HaFlaga, it's like the story of what exactly was going on with the city and the tower and the what they're building and the whole thing, the whole thing that occurred in the Dor HaFlaga, it's like sasam, it's like hidden, right? The Dor HaMabul, it's like mefurash. The Torah explains what they used to do, the Bnei Elokim, the Bnei Osa Adam, and the Hamas, right? And the Torah like goes through and explains to you exactly what's going on. But like the Dor HaFlaga and like the events and the tower and the city, it's like very cryptic. It's like, you know, and everybody's got their own way of learning it, okay? It's like every Rishon's got their own theory of what it is. It's just like one of those things that's really not open in the Torah, what exactly is going on. So a lot of different ways to learn it. We're going to try to learn Rashi. Like I said before, we're going to try to, if we can, synthesize Rashi with the Rambam in Perek Aleph and Hilchos Avos Kochavim, which we looked at last week. But it's like, you know, okay, so then you have the Dor HaFlaga. Okay? Then the Torah goes back after Dor HaFlaga, right? It goes back and Pasuk Yod, Eila Toldo Shem. Then it's going to start giving you the 10 generations, right? It's not going to tell you every person's kid. It's only going to tell you the main son of that person that's necessary to trace it to the lineage for 10 generations until you get to Avraham Avinu. So it's going to start Shem, how old he is, how old he was when he has his Arpachshad, and how long he lived afterwards. Arpachshad, how long he lived till he had Shalach, how long he lived afterwards. Shalach has Aver, right? Aver has Peleg, right? Peleg again, obviously. And then the Torah continues where it stopped before at Peleg before, right? Didn't, we don't know who Peleg's kid was. It put in the Dor HaFlaga, and now it continues that Peleg lived for 30 years and he has Reu, right? Reu's child is Serug. Serug is Nachor. Nachor is Terach. And then it goes, Terach has three children, Avraham, Nachor, who was named after his grandfather apparently, and Haran. And Haran has Lot, right? It goes through Avram, Vayamas Harchal Panei Terach, and then you have the stories of Haran dies in Or Kasdim in front of Terach's father, where he was born. And it tells you about Avraham's wives. Avram and Nachor get married, and then Terach takes the whole family, Avram with him, and all the wives, and they leave Or Kasdim for some unexplained reason. And they go to Eretz Canaan, but they come to Haran, which is not Eretz Canaan. Right? A strange pasuk. For some reason, they're going to Eretz Canaan. We don't know why, but they're going to Eretz Canaan, and then they don't get there. They don't get to Eretz Canaan. They come to Haran, and they stay there, and then Terach dies. Okay, those are basically the two parshios, and there's a lot of strange things here, and the Torah is basically, and the next parsha is Lech Lecha, V'yom Hashem Avraham Lech Lecha Me'artzecha Me'laducha Beis Avicha. And all of a sudden you have Avraham, he's Lech Lecha, he's 75 years old, and we have Avraham tells him to leave your land and leave your father's land and go to this land I'm going to show you, and the whole story of Avraham Avinu begins. But the whole prehistory of Avraham Avinu is basically like hidden. Like we don't really know where we just know he's 10 generations after Noach. And you have a little bit of the history, the Torah tells you a little bit, but it's very hidden, okay? So Rashi is really going to help us try to learn exactly what's going on with these two prakim here. Okay, so we'll start with Rashi. Let's start with Nimrod, okay? Who was Nimrod, according to Rashi? So this is Perek Yud, Pasuk Ches. So the pasuk says, "Hu hechel Leos Gibor Baaretz." Right. So what is Rashi on Leos Gibor? is Rashi says Lahamrid Kola Olam Al Kadosh Baruch Hu Ba'atzas Dor Haflaga. So he caused everybody to rebel against the Kadosh Baruch Hu through the plan of the Dor Haflaga. Okay, so now Rashi is identifying Nimrod. Why is the Torah singling out Nimrod, the son of Cush, the son of Ham? Right? Why is he singling him out and telling us about his malchus that started in Bavel and extended to all these Erech Al-Kad, Erech Shinar? Why is it relevant? Because Erech Shinar was where the Dor HaHaFlaga occurred. Right? If you look at Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Beis, right, Rashi says it's in the Dor HaHaFlaga, Vayhi Benasa Mikedem, Vayimtzu Bika Be'eretz Shinar V'Yeshu Sham. So the Dor HaHaFlaga, like the seat of power, the Dor HaHaFlaga started from Eretz Shinar. So Nimrod, we learned to Perek earlier, was the king of his land, started in Shinar, expanded out, right? So you see Nimrod is really the king, right? The man who controlled the situation of the Dor HaHaFlaga. And he was Gibor, Rashi Leos Gibor Ba'aretz. He's the one who came up with this plan of the whole Dor HaHaFlaga. Okay, good. So now we're going to who's Nimrod? Who's this Nimrod guy? Okay,
what do you mean is this plan for the Dor HaHaFlaga that you're talking about?
Oh, the plan of the Dor HaHaFlaga is Hava Nilvana Levena Venisrafa Srefa, right? And make bricks. But Hava Nivna Lanu Ir, with Migdal Varosho Bashamayim Venasa Lanu Shem, Pena Futsak Pene Kol Aretz.
That's his idea.
That was his idea. He started that. I mean, that was his idea, Nimrod. He was really the cause of whatever that means. That let's build a tower and a city, make a name for ourselves, lest we be spread out over the whole world. Okay, that was him. Nimrod is the one who started that.
So he's from Ham?
Oh, yeah. The Rasha. Okay, Nimrod. Nimrod is the grandson of Ham. Okay, so that's the first Rasha there. The king of the Dor HaHaFlaga was Nimrod, and he's the one who came up with the whole thing. Now, once again, Pasuk Tes, Perek Yud Pasuk Tes, right? Gibor Tzayid. The next Pasuk is, Hu Haya Gibor Tzayid Lifnei Hashem. So Rashi says, Gibor Tzayid. What does it mean? He was a strong, like a Gibor, a strong man, a Tzayid, a trapper. Tzad Daitan Shabrios Bepiv. He trapped the minds of people with his mouth. Umaton Limrod B'makom. And he tilted them, he tricked them, he turned them to rebel against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay? So what does it mean? Right? What's the concept? It means he discovered the art of propaganda. He understood that if you want to get people to do the masses, you want them to follow your plan, you have an idea, you want them to go along with it, there's certain ways you have to say things, certain things you have to say, how you say it, how you have to repeat things. Right? But there's an art of propaganda, which he used to his advantage to really control his whole kingdom and to get his kingdom to follow into his Eitzah and to rebel against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Nimrod was the one who discovered this incredible art that governments use to control the people, right? Propaganda. Right, through his words, he was able to trick them and to get people, to manipulate people through what he said and, you know, his PR. He controlled the newspapers, no doubt, in those days, and he controlled the press. And he had them say the right things, and, you know, over and over, and he tricked people, and he got them to go along with the Eitzah, right? In fact, you'll see he made them think it was their idea, okay? That's part of the genius of Nimrod. Okay, propaganda. So he was Gibor Tzayid Lifnei Hashem. What does it mean, Lifnei Hashem? What does it mean, Gibor Tzayid Lifnei Hashem? Rashi says, Lifnei Hashem, Miskavein Lahaknito Alponov. So it means, Lifnei Hashem means he had kavana, his intent was to anger God in his face. Okay, it was in his face. So when we take a little, this Rashi really is teaching a little bit about the Dor HaHaFlaga now. Right, so you'll see Rashi would come to Dor HaHaFlaga a little bit. Is the Atzas Dor HaHaFlaga? It's an in-your-face thing to God. They recognize God and they're trying to anger Him right in His face. Okay, Lifnei Hashem, right in front of Him. Okay, they're not hiding from Him. It's a frontal attack. Okay, Gibor Tzayid Lifnei Hashem. Al Kain Ye Amar. It's a funny pasuk. Alken Ye Amar. Kinimur Gibrotzai Lefnei Hashem. So what does it mean, Alken Ye Amar? Therefore it is said, Al Kol Adam Marshia Ba'azis Panim. On any person who's evil, with like an Azis Panim, a certain brazenness, Yodea Ribono Miskavin Limrod Bo. He knows his master, but his kavana, his intent is to rebel against him. Yomar Zeh, Ki Nimrod Gibor Tzayin. They would say about this person that he's like Nimrod Gibor Tzayin. He knows this is like Nimrod became the paradigm that people would say they're just like Nimrod. He's just like Nimrod. Gibor Tzayin Fnei Hashem. Okay, it's a funny pasuk. What exactly is it? Who, you know, this? We're not going to take it up this week, but there's another people who are, Rashi says, Gibor Tzayin, Yodea Boron, Miskavin Limrod Bo, is also Anshe Sedom. Rashi says the same thing.
Okay, we're not,
Anshe Sedom also. That he says the same thing, is Yodea Boron, Miskavin Limrod Bo. So it's Alken Yomer. Okay, but fine. But we're not going to take up that string this week. But so this funny pasuk here is it becomes like Nimrod becomes a paradigm that people say he was like famous for what he did, became known. It was known what he was doing, that he was rebelling against God. It was an open brazen azus panim against God. He recognized the Kadosh Baruch Hu and he rebelled against him. Okay, that's Nimrod, and he did it through the art of propaganda. Right, through tricking people, knowing what to say and how to manipulate them, he was able to do it. Okay.
People knew that he was in this way. He was doing propaganda.
I mean, they probably didn't realize they were being tricked, deceived, manipulated.
But now they know that he was
in the not the propaganda. It's the on somebody who knows his master and who still is gonna rebelling against them. He's like it's basically rebellion, total rebellion. That kind of an azus panim, who knows he's like in theory he's the eved and still he's gonna rebel against the master. That's like Nimrod. That's what Nimrod did. That's who he was. He knew who his master was and still he rebelled against him and fought to break free. Okay, that's Nimrod. And that other pasuk, Min Arzahu Hahiyatza Ashur, so Ashur we saw is the son of shame, right? Is descended to shame, the good guy. So Min Arz Rashi says, Kivan Shura Ashur is bun of Shoman the Nimrod. So Ashur saw that his children were listening to Nimrod. Nimrod was being successful, swaying even the children of shame to follow in his ways. Umordin b'makom, rebelling against the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Livnos Hamigdal, to build the tower, right? That was the act of rebellion, was building the tower. So Yatza Mitocham. So that's what it means. Me'artzahu Yatza Ashur is Ashur, the son, you know, the descendant of shame. The son of shame saw that this Nimrod guy is up to no good. Everybody's being tricked and following him. There was nothing you could do. You couldn't stop the process. You couldn't stop it. So all you could do is leave. You had to flee. You had to get out of the country. It was the only option. You couldn't stop the process. But that was Ashur's decision. You know, and he basically took his children and he left. Okay, good. That's a little preamble. Okay, then like we said, the Torah goes through recounting Cham and Yefes and Shem, and it stops at Pelek, and it tells us Ki b'yam of Niflega Haaretz. Okay. So what does Rashi say? So this is a little bit of a long Rashi, and bear with me, it's going to be interesting later on. But Rashi, okay, it's Perek Yud Pasuk Chaf. Okay, this is really, it's the key Rashi. This is where everything hinges upon. Okay, so it's Pasuk Chaf. So Niflaga Nizbalbalu Halashonos V'nefutsu Min Habika V'nisfalgu B'chol Olam. So this is when the dispersion and the languages became mixed up, and they were spread out from the Bika, from the valley, which was Eretz Shinar, right, Nimrod's kingdom, and they were spread out over the whole world. Lamdeinu shahaya Aver Navi, shekora shem b'no al shem Asid. Okay, this is actually how you know, we asked that question, how do you know everybody's shayla yeshiva shem v'Aver, how do you know Aver was such a tzaddik? He's a Navi, because of this pasuk. So Follow this Rashi. How do you know not Eber was a Navi? Vishanini b'seder olam. Shebesof yamav nispalgu. So at the end of Peleg's life is when the haflaga occurred. Okay. Why? How do you know that? Because all the Pasuk says is ki b'yamav niflagarts. In his days, right, the haflaga occurred. Why? She'im tomer b'tchilas yamav. If you mean it was like the beginning of his days when he was first born. Hare Yaktan Achiv Tsar Mimenu. So his younger brother Yaktan, whose very name was Yaktan, which is fortunate, right? As his younger brother Yaktan, who's younger than him, the holy Kamish Bachos Kodumchin, and he had many children, all these families before, right? Shenemar v'Yaktan Yalad v'Achakach v'Yikolaretz. So you see, the Torah basically interrupts the chain of lineage, right? It goes through Shem and all those, and it stops at Peleg, which is like halfway through, and interrupts it with the whole Dora Flaga. And it's showing us that after all this occurred, that's when the Flaga occurred. So if Yaktan had been afterwards, it should have, I guess, brought down Yaktan later and not brought it at all, right? So the fact that it's after Yaktan has all these kids, Eilu b'nei Shem shechosam, Eilu mishros Noach, Eilu nifidu ha-hagayim baris achar ma'abol, and then vahi b'nasim mekedem, right? But he called it Safa Achas v'dvar machadim. So it can't be in the beginning of Peleg's life because his younger brother had all these kids and was born before the Dora Flaga. Okay, so it can't be the very beginning of Peleg's life. V'im tomer she'emtze yamav. Now let's say you'll say it'd be somewhere in the middle of Peleg's lifetime is when it occurred. During his days, the Flaga occurred. Okay, good. Lo ba kasav listam el lefarish. So this is a principle, Torah Shabbat Balpa, is that then basically what do you know? You don't really know anything. So when did the Flaga occur? I don't know. I mean, how long did Peleg live for? Peleg was, he was 30 this, he was 209, so it was 239. So somewhere in 239 years. So basically, Torah's not really telling me exactly when it occurred. Somewhere in a 239 year period. That's not good. The Torah's not clarifying anything. It's making things just as vague as they were before. Right? So why would it bother telling me that? Right? So what are you going to say? Halamata shebishnas mos peleg nispalgu. So it must be, it can't be the beginning of his life, it can't be the middle. So the only possible thing is at the very end of his life.
Why well, can't it be the middle? I don't understand.
Because then when did it occur? He's 239. When did it occur?
Why do we care?
Well, then the Torah's not telling me anything. Why is it telling me? Lo ba'kas lista melefarish. It's trying to explain something to me. The Torah's trying to explain when did the haflag occur?
Even if you want to say that the reason that Haver is a Navi because he called Peleg before he was born.
Right.
Then you can say the middle still.
Then you could say the what? The middle.
Still.
Fine, you could say the middle. It's not a poor, but for Haver.
They're separate points.
Yeah, they're separate points. They're separate points. The first thing is basically Seder Olam. Seder Olam is to, you know, going through the whole days, whatever it is the whole chronology. And it's going, Kibiyam of Niflagaretz. So when exactly, what does the Torah mean? In his days, the Haflaga occurred. It can't be the beginning. It doesn't work out with the order the Torah is putting it. And it can't be the middle because the Torah is not telling me anything. So it's got to be the end. Well, if it's the end, how could Aver give his son a name that's only relevant on the day he died? It must be. Aver was a Navi.
Well, why is Rashi assuming that if it's in the middle, it's not telling you anything?
Well, it doesn't tell you. So then when did the Haflaga occur?
Somewhere in the middle of his life, I don't know.
Right, but then it's not really telling me anything. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I know it occurred somewhere. Yeah, I mean, well, it puts it at least in a 239-year period.
Also, at the end of his life, it puts you in, like, I don't know, a 20, 30-year period. Like, you don't
No.
Know
the end of his life means the last year, the day he died.
Like, Mamash, the day he died.
Yeah, that year. Correct. That now I know when that flag occurs. The flag occurs the day he dies, or during that year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right, the day he died, that's the Yom Tov. In the end of his days, that's when the Haflaga occurs. Mm-hmm. Okay, look, I mean, my point is not really to... this is how Rashi learns, okay?
Okay,
I understand. I hear the point a little bit, to argue a little bit. suffice it to say, the academic scholars don't buy this Rashi. They hold it's not clear. So, but this is Lo Bo Kasam Lista Melefarish, right? That's a principle. The Torah's not trying to he's not trying to confuse you, he's trying to make things clear. Okay, if you say that, then the only thing that makes sense to say is at the end of his life.
And the Torah specifically even say the end of his life?
It just says, yeah, Torah is not being clear. The Torah is, if you're just learning Torah Shebichsav and you don't know Torah Shebichsav, you don't know Rashi, then you have no clue when the Dora Flaga occurs.
So right now we just don't know why the Torah chooses to do just whatever.
Oh, we don't know why the Torah is so cryptic. at this point. Okay, but maybe at the end we'll have some idea. Okay. Okay, good. Okay, now let's take up the Haflag itself, right? Migdal Bavel. Let's take up the little story. I'm just going to do a couple psukim. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, just a couple psukim in the beginning, and then we'll start to develop what's going on. So the first pasuk is Perkei Av Pasuk Av. Vayhi Chol Aretz Safa Echas Udvar Machadim. So the whole world was one language, okay, and Dvar Machadim. Dvar Machadim is a cryptic term, right? Safa Achas, Rashi says, Lashon HaKodesh. Okay, I don't know why, I'm not exactly sure what's the import of that. But what is Dvar Machadim? So this is the key Rashi, okay, and for the Dor Flaga. Is Bo Be'etza Achas. Okay, Dvar Machadim means like singular words, right? We're like one unified, they had one concept, right? You one idea. The Amru. Lo kol hemenu she yibor lo es hayonim. It's not really right. Lo kol hemenu. It's not like where does God get off choosing for himself the upper, you know, the upper, the heavens? Right? That's where he lives, in the heavens. Where does he get off that he lives up in the sky, and we are living down here on earth? That's not fair, right? Lo kol hemenu she yibor lo es hayonim. Nala lerakia v'nasrimo mochama. Okay, let's go up to the sky. We'll build this tower. It'll go all the way up to the sky. How high is the sky? I don't know. It looks high, maybe 1,000 feet, 2,000 feet, maybe even 3,000 feet. Okay, they didn't know. Well, don't worry, we'll get there, and we're going to fight a war against them. Okay, that's the first shot. They're fighting a war, building a tower. Okay, right? This is going to... Okay, the Medrash in Bereish Yisra, Rashi's source... The idea was they're going to put it in a Avodah Zarah on top with a sword in its hands. Okay, that was going to help the situation. Okay, Avodah Zarah with a sword, that's going to help them fight. Nice. Okay, yeah, look, this is their Eitzah. Okay, Nimrod's idea, and they all went off. They bought it. Davar Acher, you'll see how they bought it in a second. Davar Acher, what does it mean, Dvarim Achadim, is Al Yichudo Sha'olam. Right, Dvarim Achadim on the one, right, against Yichudo Sha'olam, Makash Baruch Hu. So it's words against God. Okay, what exactly does that mean? How is that different from the first pshat? It's not entirely clear, right? Oh, it just means Dvar Machadim means words that they had. It was Dvar Machadim, it was words against God. Yichud Sholom, the one existence of the world. Right?
How does that explain?
How does it explain what? Oh, the word Achadim?
Yeah.
Oh, Achadim, it's like Echad, one, like singular. Yeah, Echad. Yichud, you're right, Yichudo, right? It's against Yichudo Sholom. Okay? That's the second shot. Dover Acher. Okay. Well, it sounds similar, but what exactly?
The first shot was, what was it?
They said, it's not right. Why is God? He's living in the sky. We're down on earth.
Right.
We got to go up there, and we got to fight for position. Right? There's like Rashi's later on. When you have, if you have like a war, right? Whoever's in the higher position, the guy in the mountain has the advantage over the guy in the valley. They're chucking things down, right? It's like a superior position, right? So he took such a great position where he can do so much damage to us. Okay, where is, in terms of what? What are they all worried about? The mabul, right? The mabul. It's because you see the pasuk beforehand is right before is. Ela nifidu agoyim ba'aretz achar mabul, right? It says achar mabul. He benishes the mekedav. He eats it, right? So it's a transition from the mabul, right? The whole thing with this whole, according to Rashi, the whole kind, the whole context of this is that the haflag happened 340 years after the mabul, right? Not such a long time in those days, right? People lived a while, and it was a traumatic event. You can imagine the mabul. For these people, right? And we'll see throughout the Rashi's, the Mabul is going to come up again. If you look earlier in the Parsha, it's in much earlier, in Perek Vav Pasuk Yud Zayin, when Hashem tells Noah, Vani Hinini Mevi Es HaMabul Mayim Al Aretz, right? So when Rashi is explaining what the word Mabul means, right? Shebal Es HaKol, Shebilbol Es HaKol, Shehuvel Es HaKol, Menagavol Anamoch, right, it caused everything to wear away, it confused and mixed everything up. Hovel is really transport everything from the high places to the low places. Right? That's the key one for us. Zeh lashon unklus, shetirgam tufana, like a flood, shehitzef as a kol, caused everything to float away. Vehibiyam lebavel, and it brought it to Bavel. Shehi amuka, which is the lowest place. Lekach nikra shinar. Right? Bavel is called shinar. The Pasuk opening says that later. So why is it called shinar? Shinin arusham kol meisei mabel. Because all the dead bodies of the mabel were like stirred up and brought to shinar and Bavel. Okay, so you see these people, this is the only place they could live. They needed a place. They're looking for a place. Rashi says, we'll just skip to Pasuk Beis for a second. Benasu mekedem shay yoshim sham kidechziv, right? Venasu misham loser lehem makom lahachzik es kulam. They went out to find a place that can fit all them. Velo matzur el shinar. So they found shinar. It was a great place. It was big. It was open. One problem: a lot of corpses. Okay, a lot of corpses from the mabul was there. Whatever. They had to do a little kfura. They got it past them, but apparently there's a certain trauma that's associated with all those dead bodies. And they knew what had happened, right? This is not... Nimrod was a grandson of Ham, right? A great-grandson of Noach. So they were aware of the mabul, and they were terrified by it. Okay, in fact, the Nimrod, you'll see Nimrod really took advantage of their fears. That was part of his propaganda. Is he told them, look, there's this mabul that's coming on. Why is God able to destroy us with a mabul? Because he took a position of power against us, right? He's all the way up there in heaven. If we want to stop him, we're going to have to attack. We're going to have to attack him. So that's the migdal. It's a weapon, right? It's an attack weapon. It's a milchama, right? It's nasim ha-milchama. It was a weapon of attack that can go up there and attack a Kadosh Baruch Hu in order to prevent God using his weapons of mass destruction, like he had done before. Okay? This is a genius scheme. You get everybody afraid. We were discussing last week with the Ode Vodazara, right? That's what they do. How do you control the masses? You tell them there's this conjure, right? There's this weapons of mass destruction, right? They can be used at any time to destroy us. And therefore, let's ramp up the military. We need to go to war. We got to go into Iraq. We got to build a tower, okay? We got to stop him from using the weapons of mass destruction again, right? That's how you then the people, Patriot Act, right? We don't need liberties anymore. We don't need freedoms. Nimrod, you'll save us, whatever your plan is. The people get all confused. They get scared. They're terrified, okay? And then you need a war. Right, that's and all the resources go into building this tower, right? A big tower, right? And it's a great way for if you're a smart king, if you're in government, you want to control the people, you create a fear, and you get all the money going into building up your military, right? This tower that's going to go to the heaven, what's the biggest government boondoggle ever, right? How much money goes into building a tower that goes to the sky? Right, it consumes resources, so it's a great. The plan has a tremendous organizational facility for Nimrod. Right, it takes people's fears, it directs them into a war, and it's in his central city, right, where the city in the Migdal, right, and it promotes an expanded military and this tremendous weapon, and the goal is to take away the weapons of mass destruction from God. Okay, that was the plan, according to the first shot. Right, the second shot is al yichudo shel olam. It's a different idea, right? It's really just a. I'll just say it now, and we'll go into maybe. I'm not sure if I'm gonna have time to explain it more. It's al yichudo shel olam means it was just an ideological. The tower had an ideological purpose. Okay, it was against the idea of God. Okay, we'll maybe I'll take it a little bit more, this time or next time. But and the third shot, dvar davar acher, dvar machadim. Amru, echad le'elev v'tafresh nunvav shanim, once every 1,656 years, harakia mismoted. So every 1,656 years, they did the calculations from Adam Risho until Noah was 600 years old. You'll do it yourself. You realize that's where Rashi gets his number from. So they said every 1,656 years, the heavens, kind of get shaky a little bit and gets loose. And the whole world starts to flood. You know what I mean? And it starts raining for 40 days. It's not a stable structure, this earth we're living on, okay? It's unstable. What are we going to do? Kishim sh'asim ha'mabal. Just like in the Mabal, that was after 1,656 years, the whole thing happened, right? Then a flood occurred. Bo v'naslan esluchos. Let's make support pillars for the sky, right? We'll make support pillars. The first support pillar, of course, was in that city. Of course, that's where you got to start building. But their plan was ultimately to make four. Therefore, ultimately, you know, they had exactly worked out where they're going to put the support pillars, the east, the west, the north. And they're going to start here, but you have to build these towers. They're starting early, hopefully, a 1,000 years. It's going to take some time. It'll take time, but they had time right then. They're going to build these support pillars. They're going to go up to the earth and they'll support it, right? Right? What's the.
How would you build that in the valley? When you build
it? Yeah, that's a good question. I'll tell you why, because that's made economically, it made more sense. You know what I mean? You want the money coming into your city. You know what I mean? You don't want to... That's where they were. That's where they were. Okay? It's a good question. They didn't have bricks there either. You see, that was a big problem. They didn't have bricks. They had to... We'll tell you up in a second. But what's the pshat, right? Okay, the pshat like this. There's three groups mentioned in this Rashi. I don't think it's a machlokas in the Rashi. There's three groups who all like this, who all... Nimrod got. Nimrod got all these three groups to go ahead with this Migdal. See, who are these last groups? Who are these guys? Right? So they're the scientists of the day. Okay? They're the scientists. They had a theory. Okay? They said like this. We've discovered a pattern in nature. Okay? There is no God. He didn't bring the Mabul. You're all making a mistake. You're all afraid that God brought some Mabul and to punish you. Wrong. No such thing. It's all nature. We've discovered a pattern. Once every 1,656 years, it happens. That's what our models predict. And hey, look, it happens, right, with our models. It'll happen again. Okay?
Why is it 1656 again?
Well, that was if you count from other Rishon until the Mabul was 1,000. It happened to be exactly what the models predicted. It's interesting. They might have had to tweak a little thing, put in a certain constant in order to make sure it came out right, a little bit post hoc. Okay, for that. It was very complicated mathematics back then. Most people didn't really understand it. And they said, look, we're in that multiverse, that this is where it happens. Everyone does it. This is what they say. You know, and don't think, this is what scientists will, when they have a certain prejudice, they're trying to deny the reality that the Mabul occurred as a punishment to them, so they'll come up with any kind of theory, no matter how ridiculous it is, and even though to a simple person you see that something happens once, that doesn't really establish a pattern. That's a pretty weak pattern. You know what I mean? It's a very weak theory. It's a very weak theory. But I'm telling you, it's no stupider than a lot of the theories that we have nowadays, right? With the multiverse theory. You guys are holding the multiverse, right? Yeah. Okay. Good. Multiverse. Okay. It's no crazier. It's the same theory in the multiverse. Right? It's the same when the scientists are the same thing. So these scientists, now no doubt, these scientists who came up with these theories, they were the ones who were going to be employed in order to build this tower. Because you're going to have to geometry, you know what I'm saying? So it worked out for them anyway. They were being employed by the government. Okay, so you see, it all comes together. Then you have the ideologues, the guys who really have a real hatred for Yehudo Sholom. And then you have the guys who just love military spending. Okay, they love military spending, they love the war, there's weapons of mass destruction, they're terrified, we're going to go and attack. Right, so some guys think this is an attack tower. Right, some guys in the Congress, right? Some guys are thinking, no, we're doing this for defense. We're just trying to support this guy so it doesn't crack down. And some guys are motivated by just ideology. But it's three different groups. But they all want this tower. Nimrod manipulated all the different various groups and their different philosophies. And this tower was like the perfect solution for them. Okay? For it solved, everybody loved it. It had tremendous economic benefits for them in the short term. Obviously, eventually, you're going to run out of resources. It's a very stupid plan in the long term. You're not really going to get to the sky. You're going to consume all your resources, you know. But in the short term, you get a huge boom, right? And you forget the bust that'll come. But right then, you have a tremendous amount of planning, and everybody's employed, and there's work, and there's money. And
it's a bubble.
It's a big bubble. It's the big bubble of Bavel, okay? The big bubble. And it popped, and it did pop, okay? But they were afraid that it was going to pop, right? And we'll do one or two more Rashis, then we'll get to the interesting part here. Okay, so now, see, Rashi says, Ish el re'ehu, pasuk gimel. So it's umma l'umma, Mitzrayim l'kush, kush l'put, put l'knan, right? So he's highlighting, it was the nations started talking to each other, right? And it was, all these are the B'nai Knan, right? Rashi's highlighting that it was from the sons of Knan, is really this whole ingenious idea started. Okay. Now I just want to show you one thing here, Nisrafa l'sreifa, right there. The Torah goes through this whole thing. I don't know, it's like, why is the Torah going through, they're building bricks, right? The Nilbana Levena Venisrafa Srefa, Vatilhem Levena Oven, Vachim Hayalhem Lachomer. Rashi Torah goes through what they were doing. Rashi says Venisrafa Srefa, Kach Orsin Osin Levenim Shikorin Brur, Sorfanos Vikivshan. Right? So you have to bake these bricks. In Bavel they didn't have Avanim, right? Ain Avanim Bavel Shihibeka. There's no stones. So what they do is they bake these bricks in a kivshan. Okay? That's the bullet, that's it.
Yeah.
Okay, good. So okay, so they would build these bricks. Okay, in the kitchen. Now
Shame and Yafet in all this? Hanging out inside?
Shame is living in Yerushalayim at this point in time. That's what Rashi says, Makitseg Moshan. Well, we don't really know exactly, no. The Radak says that like even let's say Shame was there, or you know. He's like, sometimes, like, you're in a society where, like, even if you have intelligent individuals, and, like, they see it's a crazy plan. Like, this is just a stupid plan. You're building this tower to the heavens. It's like, it's crazy. You're not going to ever get there. It's just, you're out of your minds. And, like, everybody's, the entire society is just saying, yeah, we're just going to print money over and over, QE to infinity. Nothing bad's going to happen. Now, you have some individuals who realize this is a stupid plan. It's just going to end up in a big bust, and everybody's going to suffer. Right? Just think ahead 20 years. But it doesn't matter. Society could be paralyzed by neurotic fear, and they could have some leader who's just leading them in a terrible direction, and it doesn't matter. You have those intelligent individuals. You can't stop a society. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Shame could be there. You have people, intelligent people there. What are you going to do? You're not necessarily in control. You don't have political control, so you can see that it's a crazy idea, but it doesn't matter. Nimrod is the one with political control. Okay. It's unfortunate. It happens, though. It does happen.
Some might say, like today.
Some might say. Okay. Now, the question is like this. So we saw that Rambam last week, right? The Rambam had said he's describing the devolution of Avodah Zarah and how they start off with Dor Enosh, their philosophical mistake. Then they start with Nevi'e Sheker. They started building temples and idols until eventually everybody basically believed that either the Hamon... Right, the Hamonam, the lower level people believed that the actual idol itself was the god, and even the one percenters, right, the clergy and the politicians who ran the upper echelons of the priesthood and the government, those people, even the intelligentsia, they knew that it's true the idol wasn't the god, but they thought the star was the god. They're more sophisticated. It's not the idol was representation of the sun, but they thought the sun was the god, right? Until ultimately the entire world had forgot the idea of God, the Shem Hashem, until Avraham Avinu, who was living in Ur Kasdim, right, he, when he was 3 years old, he started thinking, until when he was 40, he finally discovered it, right, the idea of God, and right, he started arguing. So the point is, until that point, to Avraham, nobody had the idea of the Shem Hashem. It was totally forgotten at that point. So my question is like this, simple. Assuming Rashi learns like the Rambam. Okay, we'll get to And we'll I'll show you it's good. So
you and Ron would agree that the generation of Shame, like all that, those descendants.
He says individuals. Ram has five individuals. He says Shame, Aver, Noach, Mesushach, and Chanoch. Mesushach and Chanoch died before the Mabel.
Okay.
Mesushach actually died the day the Mabel was supposed to occur, according to Rashi. Right, it was pushed off 7 days. And Chanoch died earlier. So there was a couple individuals, but basically the society at large had forgotten about God. So now here, according to Rashi, we have an entire society which is motivated by an ideological war against Yehud HaShel Olam. Where did they get this idea from? Yehud HaShel Olam, how did they know about God? Yehud HaShem, it's a pretty sophisticated concept. These guys are over the Avodah Zarah. Okay, so here's the cool thing. So let's take a look. So now, the Hafluga happens at the end of Peleg's life, correct? That's what we established with Rashi. Okay, now let's take a look here. This is the cool part. Wow. Okay, so let's take a look. Now we got Perek Yud Aleph. So let's see. When did Peleg die? Let's see. Vayechi Peleg, it's Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Ches. Vayechi Peleg Shloshim Shana, Vayod Esru. So 30 years old when he has Ru as his son. Vayechi Peleg Achay Yolid Esru, Tesha Shana Masayim Shana. So 209 years after Reu is born, right, is when the Dor HaFlag occurs, according to Rashi. Right? 209 years later. Good? So Peleg was 30 years old when he had Reu, okay. And he lived 209 years after that.
Right.
And then he dies, right? And when Peleg dies is when the Dor HaFlag occurs, the whole HaFlag occurs. So 209 years after Reu is born is when the flag occurs. Correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. Now, Vayechi Re'u Shtayim U'Shloshim Shana. So 32 years. Vayolik Esaruk. Okay? So now 209 minus 32 is what?
177.
177? Yeah, 77. Okay, good. 177. That's very good. So 100, so good. So it's 177 years after Re'u is born. Good? Okay. Sorry, after Saruk is born. Saruk, okay. Now, Vayechi Saruk Shloshim Shana Vayolges Nachor. Right? So 177 minus 30 is 147. So 147 after Nachor is born. Okay, good. Vayechi Pasukhov Dalet now. Vayechi Nachor Tesha V'esrim Shana. So 29 years. So what do we say? 147? Minus 29 is how many?
147 minus 29.
118? Okay, good. We'll go with that. So I hope it's right. You didn't calculate. Okay, then it's right. That's right. Okay, good. Okay, good. So 118 years. Vayodas Terach. Okay, good. Now, Vayechi Terach Shivim Shana Vayodas Avram. Okay. Esnachor Vesharam. So assuming Avram is the oldest, which we'll see is how Rashi and the Rambam both learn. So, how old is Avraham? Right. So, so 118 years
minus
70.
48.
So Avraham, right, was 48 years old.
How many divided from 48?
Oh, very good. Okay. So now Avraham was Hikar's Boro 40 when he was 40 according to the Rambam. Now you know there's two. The Rambam says 40, and the Radak has that Girsa and Bereishis Rabbah. Okay, there's all of the Girsas that we have nowadays. There's three Midrashim scattered, and they all say that Avram was 48 years old when he was Hikar's Boro. Okay, but the Rambam and the Radak have 40. So let's go with 40. I think it's not such a big machlokas between the two Girsas, 40 or 48. But the Dor HaFlag occurs when Avram is 48. So let's work with 40. I think it's 40 is more realistic. That's the Rambam and the Radak, okay? So if Avraham recognizes his creator when he was 40, okay, 8 years before, and we saw from the Rambam before, right, and he starts arguing with the people in Orkastam, saying, what are you guys doing? There's a Yichud Hashem here. They said, well, the Tsar is crazy. He starts breaking down their idols, right? And we know the idol idolatry was the method that the king and the government and the clergy used to control the masses, right? He starts breaking down the religion of the state, right, until eventually the king tries to kill him. But where did Nimrod and the whole Dor HaFlaga get this idea to fight a war against Hashem, against the God of Avram? Where did they get the idea of the God of Avram? Right? Yichud Hashem. Where did they get it from? Avraham, right? Simple pshat. That's so weird. What caused this whole crazy, insane reaction 340 years after the Mabul to start building this tower and this ear to the sky? And what instigated the entire process? Avram Avinu, right? Avram Avinu has his idea of God, and he tries to start breaking down the Avodah Zarah of the state, the whole religion, the apparatus that the state uses to control the people. Nimrod, right? And through, as a reaction to this idea of God, this new idea, revolutionary idea that's introduced by Avraham, you have this whole thing. You have this whole process, the Dor HaFlag. It's cool, right? It's cool. Okay, good. Now we'll see one more thing. Now we'll take a look at Rashi here. Okay. Okay, good. Now, if you look, Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Chav Ches. Right, so we followed Avram's birth. Now we see Avram as Nahor and Haran. Right, Avram's younger brother is Haran. Right, Ve'ela told us Terach Telach Holius Avram as Nahor as Haran, Haran Holius Lot. Va'yamas Haran Pasuk Chav Ches Al Pnei Terach Aviv Be'eretz Molata Be'or Kastem. So in his birthplace, Haran dies Al Pnei Terach Aviv. It's a funny. What does it mean Al Pnei Terach Aviv? So Rashi says, "B'chay aviv, u'medrash agadah, yeshomrim sh'al yedei aviv meis." So because of his father, of Haran's father, Terach, right, he died. Shekibel Terach al Avram beno lifnei Nimrod, right. So Terach complained about his son Avraham to Nimrod. Al shekise says slamav, because Avraham was busting up the avodah zarah, right. This is the same story as the other. That the like the Rambam, right? Avram goes and starts destroying avodah zarah, right? He starts arguing with them, destroying it. And Avram busted up his father's idol store, right? The Medrash goes into more details. Vishlichu lekivshan eish, and they threw Avraham into the kivshan eish, right? Where does this kivshan eish come from? Right, that's the kivshan that they were using to make the bricks for the. Okay, this is the big fire that they're using in this tower to make the bricks to build the tower, right? That's the Medrash says. Nimrod wanted Avram to worship the fire there, right? He said Avram worship the fire. That's what Nimrod worshipped, according to the Medrash. So Avram said, well, I should worship the fire. The water puts out the fire. So he said, fine. So Nimrod said, fine. Bow down to the water. Okay, fine. He bowed down to the water. I'll be happy with it. He said, what do you mean the water? The water is. Evaporates, turns into clouds. Bishbal into clouds. Nimrod says, fine, you want to worship clouds? I'll go with the clouds. Right? Just, well, the air comes, the wind, and it scatters the clouds. So fine, bow down to the worship the air, the wind, that's fine. Nimrod would have accepted that. Aaron says, but look, a person, he breathes in, he takes in the air, puts in his lungs, he controls the air. You should worship a person. I said, well, I'm a person. Right? And Nimrod says, I see you're making fun of me now. You're a joker. Okay, now you see, you're not being serious. But if every person just worships themselves, you're not giving any of the Zohar. It's a ridiculous theory. It's absurd. But the whole of the Zohar is going to fall apart if everybody's just worshiping themselves. What does that mean? That's not about the Zohar. It's absurd. It's a ridiculous argument. So he throws in the kitchen age. But Avraham, what's his argument? It's a logical argument. If you have a position that's reducto ad absurdum, that if you follow to its logical conclusion, it becomes absurd, so then you have a bad premise. Right, it can't be. It's false premise. One of the ways of showing that a theory is false is if you draw it to its logical conclusion and it ends up in an absurd conclusion. That's a way of showing that you have a false theory. Now, some people don't appreciate that and they think you're making a joke. Right, they think that you're making absurd arguments, but really, it's a logical breakdown. The Medrash has it. That's always a cute Medrash, right? There's this Medrash. Rashi only quotes part of it, but Avram argued logically. He broke them down logically through logical arguments. It's to show them why Revel Desire makes no sense. And Nimrod threw him in to worship the fire, the Kivshan Eish, where they used to build the bricks in order to make the big, huge tower. Right? Throws Avram into the Kivshan Eish. Vaharan Yoshev Omer Belibo Im Avram Notzeach Ani Mishalo. You see, apparently there was like sides over here. There's Avram against Nimrod. And Haran was indecisive. Who should he follow? So he decided, if Avram's successful, he's victorious, I'll go join Avram's side. Okay, if Nimrod Notzeach Ani Mishalo, right? It's a battle, Avram against Nimrod. I'll go, Kishenitzel Avram, Amor lo Haran, Mishal Miata. They said to Haran, who are you with? You with us or you with Avram? Amor lem Haran, Mishal Avram, Ani. Like Avram, he just went through the Kivshan Eish, and this furnace, this fire came out alive. I'm with him. Vishlichu Kivshan Eish, they threw Haran into the Kivshan Eish, Vinisraf. Right? And of course he was not saved, right? Because he wasn't willing, Avraham was willing to sacrifice his life for the Shem Hashem. So he had a miracle happen to save him, an ace, right, to save Avraham. But Haran, who was not willing to sacrifice his life, right, who was relying on a miracle, was not willing to give up his life for the idea of God, so then he did not merit to have a miracle. Right? No, Avram did not. He didn't know miracles going to happen for him. He refused to. He was willing to die at Kiddush Hashem. Okay, but Haran was not. You see, Haran was saying, if Avram gets killed, I'm not with him. That's crazy. I'm with the Avodah Zarah guy over there. Okay. Vizehu or Kastim. right? Kastim is the word for Babylonians, the Chaldeans, right? Kastim. So the fire, Avram was born in Ur Kastim, the fire of the Kastim, of the Babylonians, right? So it's another word, Ur Kastim, for the Kivshan Ha'esh of Bavel, of Migdal Bavel. Okay, so that's Rashi. According to Rashi, Avraham grew up in Ur Kastim, which is the same place of Nimrod's kingdom and his city and the big Kivshan, right? The fire of the Kivshan Aish, that's where Eretz Milat of Ur Kastim. So Rashi is identifying Avraham's birthplace with basically Migdal Bavel and Nimrod.
Why
doesn't Rashi openly say any of this stuff? That's a great question. Because if you look through the entire Rashi's on the Dor HaFlaga, he doesn't mention Nimrod once or Avraham once. It's only like you have to kind of put it together in the earlier Parshios, Rashi says Nimrod was the Melech of caused them to rebel in the Atzis Dor HaFlaga. And then you have this later Rashi, which clearly has a fight between Avraham and Nimrod. And if you do the calculations, you're going to realize that Avraham was around. Right? If you look at the Torah, you just get the impression that like the Dor HaFlaga occurs, and then like many years later, Avram's born. You don't even realize that it's contemporary events. The Torah definitely goes out of its way to try to hide this connection, that Avram was around for the Dor HaFlaga. Yeah, like, it could be possibly the Torah doesn't want you to think, it doesn't want a person, it doesn't want to make it open in Mephorsah, it doesn't want to make it open that Avram Avinu was a cause of the whole Dor HaFlaga. He's a catalyst. He's a cause. Like, his whole idea of God is what caused the entire rebellion, and really the whole institution of Dor HaFlaga and their onesh and the really destruction of that generation. In a sense, you can attribute it. Obviously, it's their bechira. It's not Avram's fault. It's how they reacted to it. But you could see that maybe that would be not the greatest thing for Avram's reputation if it was, you know, known that that's one possibility of why the Torah hides it. But the Torah hides it, and also Rashi hides it pretty well. You kind of have to like piece it together. It's not like so open, but this is. It seems to me that there's enough support from Rashi, right? And also the Rambam. So putting together Rashi and the Rambam, that really the whole Dor HaFlaga and their rebellion against the idea of against HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it came from Avraham because of Avraham's rebellion against the state, right? And his introduction of this new idea and the breakdown of the whole state religion, right? And it caused them to a reaction in Nimrod primarily, it seems. Nimrod really was the main guy. And next week maybe we'll go into a little bit about Nimrod. I have an interesting take on Nimrod. And in that middle position of Yichudo Shel Olam. Like, what does that really mean exactly? It just doesn't really, right? What does that mean, Yichudo Shel Olam? They're arguing against, fight against God. So, and Nimrod, it was really Nimrod and Avram started this, and Nimrod knew how to get the people to do what he wanted. He was the first guy who really figured out the art of politics and propaganda. He knew how to manipulate people, playing with their fear of the Mabul and destruction and weapons of mass destruction, and he got them, he told the guys, you didn't believe in God, let's come up with some scientific theory. He knew exactly how to throw around the money, he knew the big projects, he knew the military, he knew the promises and the fears, and he was the master at putting political master at pulling together the whole world and uniting them underneath his grand plan. Right? But what set Nimrod off? What made Nimrod go crazy and decide to rebel against God? It was Avraham. It was the introduction of this idea which totally shattered, it was a revolutionary idea which shattered the entire worldview of the people up to that point. Okay? And next week maybe we'll take up what happens next. Okay, go ahead. Well, no, I'm saying that Avraham introduced the idea of God and Nimrod played off the fear of the Mabul that they had. The people had a fear of the Mabul. And Nimrod, he stoked those fears. He knew what to say. He played up on those fears. And he gave them certain ideas of how you can possibly protect yourselves against it. Do you know, it's like a good example is the Iraq thing, weapons of mass destruction. You know what I mean? People are afraid of weapons of mass destruction. It's in the back of everybody's mind to a degree. But all of a sudden, you come out, we have evidence that there's weapons of mass destruction. We got to go in there. We got to stop them. If we don't, they're going to kill us. And you could really, if you know how to do it, you can play to the public and make them all, everybody get scared and get riled up and they get crazy and they get afraid and they can follow, basically they'll do anything. They'll give up, they'll just follow whatever you want in order to save them. So Nimrod, he had an idea of what he wanted to do, and he used the fear of the Mabul to control the people in order to follow what he wanted to bring about. Avram didn't have anything to do with the Mabul. Avram was the real fight between Avram and Nimrod. And the Mabul was what he used to control the people.
How was that attack on Avram?
Well, the Mabul justified the building of the tower and the city. That's the Mabul. And the Mabul, it seems to me the Mabul also brought everybody together. It's you telling everybody you can't exist on your own. When the door of the Mabul, they were all a bunch of individuals, right? They were grand. They had no, in fact, they had no society. There's no monetary systems, no economic system. That was part of what the whole breakdown of that society. The door of Flugga was the opposite. They realized if they want to be strong and they want to have any fighting chance against God with his Mabul powers, right, they're going to have to come together. And that was what he united the world under this fear that if they don't unite and pool their resources together into this military, this war, you always need a good war, okay? And if everybody's united, you need to fight a war against God. Right? Governments need a war. And he united the world underneath this fear of the Mabul and against God. That's what he used to really, as his political genius, really, to really control the entire, really to control everybody, to cause everybody to unite. You can't, if we break apart and we live as individuals, we're going to get killed again. That's why we have to unite. That was his idea.
That's cool.